as a parent, I get eye rolls all the time.
Me too. Me too. Me too.
Feeling like they're like, and then half of the time you're having to be like a disciplinary, like, stop that, get off those screens, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's my least favorite, like, responsibility to be like the, you know, fun crusher. But, you know, you kind of have to, especially if they're like considering like jumping out of a car while it's moving or something, like, please, right. You guys, settle down, will you?
You know what I do when that happens with my kid is I just put the window. I put the window in the back seat up to his neck, and I just trap his head in the car, and then he can't jump out. But the head's out. He's like a dog, and then he can't.
Do not try that at home.
That is actor David Arquette. Really cool guy. Really fun. Kind of little kooky and. But also very smart, too. We had a really fun conversation, which you're going to hear in a minute. That's us talking about our parenting skills and, you know, how, you know, it's hard and how we kind of suck at it. But really cool conversation with him coming up. Before we get to that, I'm doing my Broadway show Permission to Speak, directed by Frank Oz, August 24th in Indianapolis at the Schrott Center, and August 23rd, the night before, Friday, in Schaumburg, Illinois, at the Al Larson Prairie Center for the Arts. So if you're in the Chicago area, August 23rd, come on out. August 24th in the Indianapolis area. Come on out. You can go to paulmercurio.com for tickets. It's a really fun show with stand-up and audiences telling stories, and we've been having a blast with it. And a really cool set designed by the set designer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. He's got 23 Emmy Awards, and we've got animation by J.J. Settlemyer, who did Beavis and Butthead and all these really cool shows. So I hope you guys can make it out. And a couple of random thoughts. I saw that you can genetically clone dogs, and they're getting close to being able to do that, which I'm psyched about, because we need to clone our dog Daisy, because she was we got her with a weak sphincter. We rescued her, and they didn't tell us she had a weak sphincter, which I think there should be a lemon law, by the way, because you can't check a dog out. You can't put the dog on a lift and go through and see, you know, if they might have a weak sphincter. What are you going to do? Like, how are you going to, you know, it's not like you take the wheels off and check the brakes. Anyway, so I want to genetically clone her, but minus the weak sphincter. Actually, I want to get her like a super powerful, like superhero sphincter, that where she can, like, you know, shoot things or whatever. But like right now, it's like she can't control her pee. Like, it's, we have wee pads everywhere in our house. So then I mentioned this. It looks like an assisted living facility in my house, you know, minus the smell of desitin, which is coming soon because I'm getting older. Also, I did something which I don't know if this is weird or not. I didn't have my cash cards with me, or credit cards. I only had a little bit of cash. I was at the market, and I got some turkey, like a half a pound of turkey, and I didn't have enough money to pay for the turkey. So I went back and I asked them to take some of the slices off so they could lower the price on the turkey so that I could afford it. And the person said, no, you cut it, you touched it, you own it. And I'm like, I didn't touch it, it's in the bag. And they go, it doesn't matter. Once it leaves this area, and goes over the counter, it's now public turkey. I'm like, public turkey? Whoever heard of public turkey? So I ended up leaving the entire package of turkey on the top of the counter, along with a few choice words about their public turkey policy. So just be careful. Make sure you have cash on you, because they won't take back slices of turkey, which I thought was a reasonable request. All right. Hope to see you in Schaumburg, Illinois, August 23rd. Just outside of Chicago, Permission to Speak, my show, my Broadway show. And then the next night in Indianapolis at the Schrott Center in Indianapolis. Really great venue. So hope to see you guys there. Enjoy. David Arquette. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week is David Arquette, a terrific actor, producer. As an actor, you know him from his part of Dewey Riley and the slasher franchise Scream. For which, by the way, he's won Teen Choice Awards and 2 Blockbuster Entertainment Awards. You're also known from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Friend, Shark Boy, also a prolific producer, and just produced some terrific shows and films, including Daisy Does America, Dirt, and Cougar Town. Has a new film out, The Good Half, and he's on with us today. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's great to have you on. So this is a cool, it's a cool film you got going. And it's a really interesting premise. Nick Jonas is sort of the lead character and turns home to Cleveland for his mom's funeral, and sort of, you know, a lot of interesting relationships. And it kind of reminded me of some issues that I have in my own family. But to talk a little bit about the film for folks to give them an idea of what's going on in it.
Yeah, well, I play Rick, the stepfather to Nick Jonas' character, Ren, and Brittany Snow's character. And Ren comes home to Cleveland. You know, in the film, Cleveland kind of gets a bad rap. So I want to apologize to everyone in Cleveland. I know how proud they are of their city, and I love their city. So I encourage everyone to visit. But the script was written by Brett, who's the writer who drew from his personal experiences. So he was not excited to go home and have to deal with Rick, my character, because he's kind of a narcissist. He's making all the plans for the ceremony and funeral. And it's kind of, he makes all the plans to his sort of specifications and doesn't really take their feelings into consideration.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned your character, and it's really charming and kind of like frustrating. It's like you're like a emotionally stunted adult, your character. Like, he just seems like drives this little red sports car, and it must have been fun to play. But talk about the character a bit and how you kind of got inside the head of the character.
Yeah, he is absolutely emotionally stunted. He's a narcissistic type of character. And it was pretty funny, like when we'd have these ad libs and stuff, I would think in my head, like my initial response, like how I would respond. And I was like, oh, I'd almost have to go completely opposite, because he didn't really have too much empathy, and he didn't really care about what they're thinking. And even if they, you know, made fun of him in a way, he would look at them as, how stupid are these people? Rather than right. Like look at himself in any way. But it was really funny. I mean, I got to work with an incredible cast. The two I mentioned already, and Alexandra Shipp is in it. She's amazing with Nick Jonas. Like they have an incredible rapport together. And then Matt Walsh and Elizabeth Shue. And it's funny, you mentioned my two blockbuster awards and my kids' shirt awards. But it was funny because when they were promoting the film, one of the ads that came out were like, Academy Award winner Elizabeth Shue and Emmy Award winner Matt Walsh. And I was like, hey, if you guys want to throw in the two-time blockbuster award winner,
you might as well just put in out of business video VHS video franchise award. It's hilarious.
I know, exactly.
Oh god, yeah,
it's hilarious to see.
But the characters seemed like it was really fun, and you talked about like eye rolls, because you get a sense like your characters who are your stepchildren would like eye roll about you when you walked in the room as the stepdad. Like they kind of, you're almost like they're equal, if not at times they're the parent in the relationship compared to you. It was really kind of a cool dynamic.
Absolutely. I mean, as a parent, I get eye rolls all the time.
Me too. Me too. Me too.
Feeling like you're like a, and then half of the time you're having to be like a disciplinary, like, stop that, get off those screens, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's my least favorite, like, responsibility to be like the, you know, fun crusher. But, you know, you kind of have to, especially if they're like considering like jumping out of a car while it's moving or something, like, please, right. You guys, settle down, will you?
You know what I do, like, when that happens with my kid is I just put the window. I put the window in the back seat up to his neck, and I just trap his head in the car, and then he can't jump out. But the head's out. He's like a dog, and then he can't.
Do not try that at home.
No, I think David, you should try it. Give me a call back. Let me know how that goes. But here's the thing with my kid, like I want to choke him because, like, he, you know, it's all about texting with them, right? Like, they don't really talk to each other. Like, and yeah. I know I sound like an old man. So, like,
like one of his friends, his name is Wyatt. My son's name is Alex. I go, you getting together with Wyatt? I go, he goes, I don't know. I go, is he in town? He goes, I don't know. I go, hey, did you call him? He goes, no. And he looked at me. I go, well, why wouldn't you just call him? He goes, well, I'm waiting to hear back. I texted him three times. I'm like, why don't you just call him? He goes, I texted him. So then the other thing with the texting is sorry, we'll get back to your movie in a minute, but I got to get this off my chest. And then the other thing is, this is the one that really drives me crazy. So I'll be texting with him, right? Back, forth. And then the text is getting too long, or for whatever reason, I got to speak to him on the phone. So I call him within 3 seconds of the last text going back and forth. And he let it ring to voicemail. Like, he doesn't pick the phone up. And it's like...
I know, it's infuriating.
Oh my God, you're killing me.
So infuriating. I can't...
I think you have one of the most interesting careers, because you can play, you know, these, like this character, he's a little off, you know, you're good at playing what I'll call the quirky off characters, but you're also a terrific actor, and your acting is kind of quiet, which is, I think, terrific. And, you know, you did films like John's Dream with Fishes, The Gray Zone. Do you try to consciously jump from different types of projects to another, whether they're TV and film, because you seem to, it's got to be calculated on some level. And I mean, calculated in a good way, because you seem to not just, you know, pick the same kind of thing, same genre. And I was really curious how you come around to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like a challenge, so I always try to stretch myself. I once did a play where I played Sherlock Holmes, and I found out that was too far. To stretch myself was so painful. And when you have a play that's like, you know, you have 45 more shows, I ended up just like 43, 42. I was just couldn't wait for it to be over because it was so challenging.
Did you do the British accent and everything, like the whole nine yards?
Yeah, and it was like 2 hours of British accent dialogue. It was and memorizing like the majority of the lines. It was just brutal. It was just so hard. I would sweat like buckets and just, oh my gosh, it was just, I don't know, I have PTSD from it. But yeah, as far as like picking different roles or whatever, I mean, a lot of the time in the business, if you're in it long enough, you know, you go through these ups and downs and you kind of have to like, you know, sometimes it's easier to get jobs. Sometimes you really have to kind of go out there and push for them. So when they start coming, you have the opportunity to kind of like pick and choose. It makes it a lot easier to kind of like figure out what you want to do. But I like doing things that my kids can see. I like doing things that, you know, are more independent first-time directors, or, you know, something a little more character-driven.
Mm. So you're the youngest of five and I'm the youngest of three. Did you, and I, my brother and sister are like 9, 10 years older than I am. And I think I was a mistake, although my mother denies that. And, did you feel I felt like essentially like an only child? Cause at that point, like my mother's parents are running their business, furniture business. My brother and sister are like doing their thing. They're gone and out of the house. And I kind of felt like I had to figure a lot of things out on my own. Like when you've got four kids ahead of you, were you in that same boat a little bit?
Yeah, especially like that time period too. I mean, we literally were latchkey kids. We kind of had to like figure out the world on our own.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I have kids that are like, you know, I was walking to school by myself at five. You know, it was 5, 6. You know, right. I imagine my kids doing something like that, like compared to what we went through.
Yeah.
If we would just hop on buses and just disappear
right.
half the night.
Right. And there were like, and there were like no cell phones, and you didn't know if there was like creepy guys on the bus, whatever. Like we had this thing in my,
yeah.
I loved to swim. And so I was a swimmer and I swam at the boys club, and I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. And talk about like just being on your own. They had this thing called 7 to 9 age group, all boys naked swim. You had to swim naked. They wouldn't let you wear a bathing. I swear to God, I'm not making this up.
I know. My friend told me about that too. This is crazy.
Can you imagine that today? My parents like, oh yeah. You know, I remember one day my mom goes, Ma, where's my bathing suit? She goes, oh, you're doing the naked swim. You don't need your bathing suit. Like, what? What? Like,
that is just the craziest thing about one of the craziest things about the past, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, it would never happen today. I want to talk about your mom for a minute. If my research is correct, like a really interesting, eclectic background, an actress, a burlesque dancer, a poet, theater operator, a activist, teacher. Like, how did she come to do all of those things? And do you think having someone, a mother like that with those kind of varied interests is what contributed to the way you approach your life and work? Because you seem to have varied interests. You also produce, you did that pro wrestling thing for a while. Like, talk about a connection there, if there is one.
Yeah, for sure. My mom was really an incredible person. She came from a really kind of troubled background. She had to overcome a lot. She ended her life being a marriage family counselor. And on her deathbed, she finally got her certificate. And I was like, Mom, look, it's like you graduated life. And she really did that through her life. She really followed her passions and her dreams. And she gave up a lot of it to raise a family, which a lot of people have to. So I have just the utmost respect for her. I did one point found her in a book called I Was a 50s Pinup. And there were four pictures of her having a cat fight with another woman in lingerie. And I was 18 years old. And I said, Mom, I found you in this book having a fight with another woman. And she goes, oh, you know, we weren't really fighting. Oh, thanks, Mom. And that's where I asked her, like, were you ever a stripper? And she's like, no, not a stripper, but I burlesque danced a couple of times. And I said, did you have a burlesque dancing name? And she said, yes, Bootsy Bellows. So I went on to start a nightclub in Los Angeles, and we called it Bootsy Bellows.
I read that, and that is so great. I love the response. Well, I wasn't really dancing. Doesn't address the rest of it, just though I wasn't really dancing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and she was also, she was an acting teacher, and, well, like, she was a burlesque dancer. You were kind of a pro wrestler there a little bit. There's sort of a little bit of a connection, this sort of over-the-top performer kind of thing, right? A little bit of a connection.
For sure. For sure. I mean, we get a lot of, like, my sisters too with their activism, and just there's, you know, she had a really strong personality too. I mean, when she wanted to, she was like a lioness you'd always defend the little man kind of element.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Your role in Scream, if I read this correctly, well, you were supposed to be written out and killed, but the test audiences liked your character so much they kept you in. Is that true?
It is. I mean, I think Wes Craven kind of saw the writing on the wall, like they enjoyed watching my character in the dailies and stuff. So they had shot an alternate ending where my character survived. And it was funny, I got to the set and he said, David, I called you to the set because you're going to be wheeled out on a stretcher. But on the second take, we're going to have you put your thumbs up. And we'll see if the audience likes you, if you make it or not.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was amazing. Like, he had an incredible sense of humor. And we really bonded over that.
That is too much. Listen, this has been so much fun talking to you, man, and getting to know you. And seems like in some ways we have similar backgrounds, although my mother was not a burlesque dancer, as far as I know. Maybe she was. the film is The Good Half. A really, really good, big fan of your work and how it spans different genres. And keep up the good work. And we'll get you back on and love to talk to you some more about everything. But it's David Arquette, everybody.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. That's David Arquette. Awesome guy. Really fun. And hope you guys can come out. Check out my shows. Schaumburg, Illinois, August 23rd and August 24th. Schrott Center in Indianapolis. Tickets, paulmercurio.com. And thanks, guys, for checking out the podcast. We'll see you next week.